Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. This is our first show, and we're really excited. We have an amazing guest today. And let me just define a little bit of what our show is about. We're going to talk about tone, how to get it. We're going to talk to manufacturers and players. And tonight, we actually have an inventor and player. But I'll let Scott take over and introduce our guest for tonight. Scott?
Hello, everyone. Tonight, is our guest is Del Kasher. He is the inventor of the wah pedal, inventor of the Echophonic, one of the first standalone commercially available guitar effects. He played and arranged the theme for Queen of Blood, a Roger Corman film, with Frank Zappa. He was also featured with Frank Zappa in his famous Freak Out performance, along with playing with him in his mother's band, The Mothers, in the Los Angeles area. Del has also performed with Bob Hope, Sonny and Cher. He played in the Phil Spector's Wall of Sound, Motown Records, Buddy Ebsen, and Les Paul. Del, welcome to the show.
Well, hello there. How are you doing, Scott and Jeff? Good to see you. You know what? I want to correct you on just one little thing. It's not a mistake. But you see, I'm known as the guitar player that played from A to Z. So you forgot Gene Autry's Melody Ranch.
There you go.
And you forgot Lawrence Welk, which is in the W's of the alphabet. And then it's Frank Zappa. So I'm like the guitar player that played with from A to Z. So make sure that you make that included, okay? That's A to Z.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And everything in between. And everything, whatever I could do to get to work, I would do it. So I was doing that. And in the meantime, inventing stuff to make people think that I was really got some new sounds there.
Well, so the invention that you are obviously most known for is the wah-wah pedal. You have the original wah-wah pedal here with us.
I do. You can see it right here underneath my foot. It's right here. It's all hand-wired. It's like the foot pedal that came out of a Vox organ, and we just put the card in there and said, there it is. Just happened like 5 minutes. You know, we just invented it like overnight. Not even overnight. Minutes. Not actually.
Well, tell us the real story of how it came about and how you came up with the wah-wah pedal.
Well, this is my my demo recording of the not me. Yeah, this is me playing like a demo. So anyway, the thing was that the wah-wah pedal was first of all a dream of mine when I was 8 years old, because my brother had the Rhapsody in Blue recording of the wah-wah. That's where the wah-wah was really invented, George Gershwin, and that was 1927. But you know, you had to use your hand over the trumpet, and of course I didn't plan on being a guitar player. I was going to become an inventor and do all kinds of electronic things and build rocket ships and all that. And then suddenly the bug hit me. My dad was a music teacher, and he said, you're never going to be a musician. And I said, well, I'll show you. So he said, well, then I'll teach you if you can be it. So I combined my interest in electronics along with music, and that's when I started playing the guitar. And so with the wah-wah pedal, the question was, how did we come up with the wah-wah pedal was the question?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I meander a little bit here.
That's fine.
The thing is that the wah-wah pedal, everybody asked, well, how did you really come up with it? And the thing was, it was a thought in the back of my mind, like I mentioned, George Gershwin. But we couldn't get it on guitar because everything was passive electronics. Now, Leo Fender had a doo-wah pedal that went doo-wah, doo-wah for other steel players. but you couldn't really get the wah sound like the Rhapsody in Blue. And so along came this wonderful company that called Thomas Organ, and they decided to buy a company in England, which you've never heard of, called Vox, which is with an unknown band called The Beatles. That I'm just joking, of course, you know that. And so Vox decided to sell their interest to Thomas Organ, and Thomas Organ decided to take over the Vox name and turn it into an all-transistor amplophonic orchestra where every trumpet and every saxophone was going to be amplified. What a great idea. No, that wasn't a great idea. But anyway, I was so lucky to the fact that I knew the people in the band, and they asked me to play guitar with them. So I started playing the guitar, and I was playing through these transistorized Vox modified amplifiers that were really not like the AC30, excuse me, but they were not the Vox that we knew from England. And every day I would say, oh my God, this is awful, and can you fix it? Well, no, this is the way it is. And I said, this is, and I tried every way. So finally, they came up with the fact that they said, by the way, we're trying to transistorize this little knob that's Dick Denny has on the AC30. It's called an MRB switch. Dell, do you know anything about that? And I said, yeah, I think Dick Denny had that because, you know, you could only get 35 watts of amplification with a 606 tube. So how did you make it louder? You can't. But you can put a curve in there where your hearing is right at the mid-range, and it'll drive you crazy. And that's what Dick Denny, the other true inventor of the wah-wah pedal, was, came up with that idea of putting that mid-range in there. Well, what happened was, when it came over to the Sepulveda, California, with the Thomas Organ Company, they said, what's this funny switch here, and what does it do? And I said, well, it's a pretty good thing. And they said, how much is that switch going to cost? And they said, well, it's going to be like $2.95 for the switch. Oh, no, we can't spend that kind of money. How can we make it cheap? And so the people at Thomas Organ came up, they said, why don't we just put a variable tone control, you know, like sort of like a... And but that was on the amplifier, okay? And so I'm turning the amplifier controls to the MRB switch, and I'm getting... But that's hard to do that. I'm using a foot pedal now. But I was trying to use my left hand and turning the knob at the same time, which is very uncomfortable because you really need the right hand to do some picking. So I went to Stan Cutler, the head of Vox Electronics, and I said, give me a guy out of your department there. And let me. How big is that little circuit that makes that MRB switch sound? He said, oh, it's just a little card. I said, can you run it on a 9-volt battery? Absolutely. Okay, I said, let's get it in a foot pedal. And so they got a foot pedal from the Vox Continental Organ. We put it in there, and I heard now the sound of... Now remember, what I'm playing through is my prototype, but the one I heard was very clanky and very harsh. So I said, we got to modify the circuit so that I can hear it the way I want to hear it. So when I'm at the low end, you can hear it, and at the high end. So I told the Vox, I said, look, here's the future with guitar. I said, oh, no. It's going to be with trumpet players. And I said, let me make a record. So we made the Vox record. I made it in my garage with a drummer and myself, and I overdubbed the bass parts. And we put out the record. Now, keep in mind that when I developed the Echophonic back in 1958, that was put out on a vinyl record. Now Dell's going to play the Echo, and he's going to play... And they made it on a vinyl record, you know, so like, you know... You know, that was actually the Echophonic. But when they heard the Vox wah that I had developed with the pedal and made it for the guitar, they said, there's really no future in that. There's only one guitar in Lawrence Welk's band. There's four trumpet players, you know. So let's, we'll put it on a cardboard record with plastic. So that's why nobody's ever heard the record. But dial in my phone number here, and I'll send you out an MP3 of it, because I have the original master. So that's how it all developed.
If you want, we could also post it up on our actual website. If you'd like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love everybody to hear it. So it's whirling 45 years late, but that's okay. Better late than never.
I've heard it. It's quite fun. He demos it with just about any stringed instrument you can think of.
I use the electro mandolin. I use the electro. I wanted bass players to use it, and nobody uses it. And I thought that was going to be a future. And I played blues, you know. And I tried about five or different sounds. Oh, you could even make the guitar sound like a sitar. You really need that, don't you? Right? That's handy.
Who doesn't love a sitar?
Fortunately, later in the 70s, several bass players ended up using the wah.
They did. Yes, they did. And I'm glad they did.
And I just want to point out to everybody, we'll be posting pictures later, but the wah that he's using right now, that Dell's using, is the original wah that he built, that he designed. It's not a normal production one. It's his original prototype.
Yes.
And the... how old is this Equiphonic that we have here?
145 years old. It ran on kerosene originally. No, when I lived back in Indiana, I had this dream of putting record heads around a turntable, and nobody would listen to me. Of course, I was only like 15 years old at the time, but I had a radio show of my own that I overdubbed. And so when I came out to California, I had Sam Tubin, who put some money behind the company, and we made the Equiphonic. And it revolves around a turntable, not a loop, so it stabilizes the tape. And so I developed that, the Equiphonic, in 59. And what was the question again?
Well, how old is this one? It's a Fender one.
This is a Fender one. We came out with the first one in 1958. I didn't get a chance to bring it, the 58 model. But in 1959, I went to Japan with my prototype with the tube version, and then this is the Fender version that later on in 1962 we tried to get Don Randall at Fender to put it out, and they did, and they put out the Fender Equiphonic, and nobody bought it. And why? Because they didn't clean the heads. You got to clean the heads in order to get echo out of the whole thing. And that was a problem. But an interesting side story. May I just jump to
one
story? I don't want to throw too many things in the iron here, but the thing was, I had my Equiphonic, and you know what, this is original pots, everything's original, nothing has been changed.
While he's setting up, the Equiphonic uses a giant, it's like a giant capstan on there that stabilizes it, and then the head rotates around that capstan, if I'm correct.
Exactly, right. And it's based upon the principle of an Ampex 351 tape recorder that stabilizes the tape before it goes across the heads. And by this guitar player who I got to know pretty well, you never heard of him, but it's a guy named Les Paul. I
think he makes guitars.
Did.
No, yeah. he made good music, actually. He was pretty good.
And
I insisted on meeting him when I was 15, and I got a nice picture with Les and knew him for my whole lifetime until... you know, right up to the end of his life. Anyway, back to 1959 with the Equiphonic. Then we'll jump into the wah-wah pedal and do all kinds of crazy things.
Absolutely.
But I just have to tell you, you know what happens when you go to Japan and you play the Equiphonic? So the thing was, when I play the Equiphonic on stage, well, you've heard this all the time, but believe me, in 1959, nobody had heard this type of sound. And so there was only one Hammond B3 organ in all of Japan, And the group I was with was the Three Sons, had a B3, an accordion, and me on guitar. And so I used my Echophonic for all my sound. So it sounded like it was like the record, you know, just like the record.
Right.
So this gentleman who was renting the organs to us, Japanese gentleman, very nice person, he said, I'd like to buy Echo from you. And I said, no, I can't sell it to you. And the next concert, he said, I'd like to buy Echo. I'll give you American dollars. And no, I can't sell it to you. And that went on for the whole month concerts that we did. And end of that story, 15 years later, me and the Echophonic kind of like, you know, what, I didn't use it that much after that, but got a call from the Roland Corporation, and he said, is this Dale Casher? And I said, yes. Oh, the chairman of Roland knows you. I said, wait a minute, no, there's another Dale Casher. He must know, somebody else has got my same name, that's not me. No, he knows you. And he gets on the phone, and he says, Dale, you not sell me Echophonic. I'm chairman of Roland Corporation. I built Space Echo. So with that, he says, come to Japan and help introduce our invention, the guitar synthesizer, which I did. And Mr. Taro Kakahashi is also noted for having invented and discovered the MIDI design. So that's a very dear friend of mine and a wonderful gentleman and a wonderful company. Roland, this is not advertisement, but I must say Roland is a wonderful product, okay?
Yeah.
And they're great people.
People, the one thing we have, it's hard to remember, I mean, for back then, what you have to remember is that there were no pedals back then. It was just guitar and a few amps. There wasn't that many amps. Like now, there's myriads of pedals. This was one of the first, the Echophonic was one of the first standalone effects unit for a guitar or whatever instrument, which is kind of incredible at that.
Well,
even then, the wah-wah wasn't even around. Nothing was fuzz tone.
We had the fuzz tone, and the fuzz tone was either, you know, we had some very basic fuzz tones, or we just turned our amplifier real loud,
right,
and that was our fuzz tone. But the thing was that there really wasn't anything of this, and this was a little too sophisticated for 1958 for guitar players, because you'd have to clean the heads every night with a cotton swab, and you know, it was just a lot of work to maintain it. So it really wasn't that successful of a product, but I sure loved it, and it worked well. And of course, Mr. Kakahashi, the chairman of Roland Corporation, certainly was impressed, and so that's why he made the Space Echo.
I'm surprised they didn't use it in the studio more, because in the studio at that time to do Echo, they had to use another tape deck, and it would seem that this would be really easy to just to pull into a session.
As a matter of fact, we did. In fact, I was flown to New York to do several recording sessions, and the idea was you can...
He's adjusting the head around the capstan.
Okay, that's cool. Okay, but, however, you can do this. So now you can do it this way. So there you could vary the echo much more than a tape machine.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's more immediate to change the delay.
Just by...
Because a tape deck, you just use, that's it.
Either you got 7.5 or you get 15 inches per second. And you got either fast echo or you got the...
Right.
And that's your choice. So anyway, it was great to... I thought it was a great invention myself. I thought it was pretty great, but, you know, and I made good use of it. And I thought the wah-wah pedal was a really great idea. Until, you know, they brought James Brown over to the Vox company, and I said, James, you got to hear this wah-wah pedal. Man, this is so cool. And I said, listen to what you can do. Well, you know, I was playing all kinds of things with them, you know, like... Or, you know, And he said to me, he said, you know, why do you want the guitar to go? Why do you want it to go wah?
Why not?
And he said, you know, all we want is I feel good. And he said, oh, there's no, there, I don't know why you'd want to do that. You know, why you would? Didn't make sense to him. So anyway, James is wonderful about it. He appreciated my playing, and we became good friends. And finally, we did a demonstration for all the composers of Hollywood at Century City, and I'm playing the wah-wah pedal, and I'm going, you know, And the composers were like staring at me with their arms folded, like, this kid nuts. What is he doing? You know, no. And so everybody's like looking at me like, okay, so what's that mean? Except one guy. He comes up to me and he says, hey kid, give me your phone number. Got a card? I said, nope. I'll write my phone number on the napkin. So he says, I'll have Universal Pictures call, for I want to use you, that with you on the pedal. And I said, really? Sure. Here's my phone number. He said, no problem. Universal will be calling you in 2 days. I said, you've got it, buddy. Thank you very much. You know, that was you've heard those stories before, haven't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, 2 days later, Universal called me. And they said, you know, Vic Mizzi, who wrote The Addams Family, heard you and loves what you do, so you're going to be the featured artist on his 60-piece orchestra thing playing the wah-wah pedal. And that's what happened. And Vic hired and discovered, really, me and the wah-wah pedal in February of 1967 with my original prototype. And my dear friend Tommy Tedesco, who was the first chair guitar player in this town for all the dates and part of the Wrecking Crew, was a little bit surprised because he walked in and sat on chair number one, and they said, Tommy, Dell's playing chair number one. And he said, oh, I don't care. Fine, as long as I'm getting paid, I don't care. And he figured, let Dell fall on his face, you know. And But we became very good friends, and Tommy was a gentleman of all time, and we loved him all the way through his lifetime. So anyway, I don't know if I've answered your question of how we got this thing to where it's at.
Absolutely did. Now I have another question regarding the wah pedal. So who was the first mainstream artist that you heard utilize the pedal? And in your opinion, did they use it correctly? And if not, how do you think they should have used it?
Well, the matter of correct is not really a term I would like to apply to anything that I do. Just like if I compose a song, it's not like I have to have you do it this way, because if it's done that way, it might be a bigger hit. So it's just a matter of how I envisioned the wah pedal to be. And I envisioned it like, you know, like a... Or I figured like it could be like this. Or like a... Over the Rainbow with a wah-wah pedal. And I play the Over the Rainbow, and people say, wow, I can't believe you use a wah-wah pedal Over the Rainbow. But it sounds good, you know, because... So the thing is, the wah-wah pedal was really... I didn't have a choice of what's right and wrong. I just was trying different styles for the record, which you will hear on the MP3. Just send $2.95 for the MP3, and we'll make sure you get one. No, I'm just kidding about that. And I could use the money, but anyway, besides the point, we want you all to know that you'll remember that I... Well, I had these small newspapers come over to my house. Like the New York Times came over about a year ago. They called me up and they said, we'd like to do an interview with you about the wah-wah pedal. And I said, who are you with? They said, New York Times. And I said, I don't do interviews with little papers like that. I do like the Toluca Times, you know, and the Hammond Times of Indiana. No. But they came over, they did a nice story on me. But actually, the pedal is, as far as its usage of it, the downside about the whole wah-wah pedal issue is that Vox had spread themselves out so thin with trumpets, saxophones, guitars, everything else, amplifiers, and none of the amplifiers of the solid state really were what you'd want to use as far as usable like the AC30s. So they went bankrupt a year later, 1968, they were gone. And I thought, boy, I know now that wah pedal was a dumb idea because they went out of business, nothing happened. And so I kept my, I got about, you know, 10 wah-wah pedals, you know, and everything that came up there, they all the guys at the factory would say, Dell, you got to take the wah pedal, take this one, take this. I said, I got my prototype. I don't need that one. No, take this one too. Take the Clyde McCoy. By the way, how'd they get the Clyde McCoy name? You didn't ask me that.
Well, he's a trumpet player, so I'd imagine.
Yeah, well, what did he have to do with inventing the wah-wah pedal?
He had a name.
He had nothing to do with it.
Exactly. He just had a name.
He
right?
actually, he was famous for a thing called... it was called the Sugar Blues, and so that was a trumpet solo, and Joe Bonaron, head of Vox, said, "You know what? We ought to sound just like Clyde McCoy. Let's call Clyde McCoy, and we'll put his name on it." So they did. That's how it happened. I said, why don't you put my name on it instead? They said, well, it'll never go with guitar. It's not a guitar thing. And I've got catalogs where it says, the new invention of the wah-wah pedal, and ideal for wind instruments and other instruments that you may want to use for. Never mention guitar.
Wow. Now, let me ask you, who do you think, who used it the most imaginatively, in your opinion, as far as a with their instrument, the wah-wah pedal? Who do you think was... really kind of blew you away?
I think, you know, okay, we got to fast forward. The 1967, I was playing Motown dates. I was playing the, you know, I couldn't use a wah-wah pedal with Gene Autry, but I could use it on some of the Motown dates. But really, it really wasn't accepted. I was working with the Wrecking Crew. And really, Phil Spector really just had his sound. He had his wall of sound, and this is what he wanted. And he wanted like it would just or whatever. You know, I'm not playing that. That sounds like Elvis Presley right now, but that's the wrong sound. But anyway, getting back to it, I think that in June of 1967, I said, you know, I've done like 4 movies for Universal. I did Don't Make Waves. I did Ghost and Mr. Chicken. I did the Traveling Sales Lady, with the wah-wah pedal. And it was all featured stuff. And the record people just didn't go anywhere with it. Nowhere. So I called my old buddy Frank Zappa up. And I said, Frank, you got to have something here. I'm going to send something to you that you're going to love. It's called a wah-wah pedal. He says, great, send it over. So Frank started using it, and I said, by the way, you're working in New York, right? And he said, yep. And I said, isn't Jimi Hendrix out there right now? He said, yeah, he is. I said, I'll send 2 of them to you. Give 1 to Jimmy and keep 1 for yourself and see what you guys can come up with. Because I said, it's not going anywhere with the record industry. The film industry, you know. So Frank started using it, and I thought that Frank was very creative the way he used the wah pedal, but he was very creative with everything he had done. And I loved working with Frank because he let me do anything I wanted on the guitar. He said, just go ahead and play it. And I loved working with Frank. He never put me in a box. I could play as much as I wanted. And so he started using it, but really, I would say that White Room came out then in November of 67, and it was with this kid named Eric Clapton, you know. And 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 he would just go and do wah, 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 wah. And he said, I don't know what the heck this thing's all about. You know. So I didn't think it was too useful the way it was intended that way. So I thought when Jimi Hendrix got into it, he used it. And that was 69. Well, okay, fine. September 1969. Do you realize that's like almost 2.5 years later? By that time, I said, you know what? Have at it. It's great what you're doing, but that's all history for me. And my stuff, you know, I'm looking to starting producing, writing soundtracks for TV shows. And I wasn't going to play out in the rain like Jimi Hendrix did out at Woodstock. But I thought that, you know, it was kind of cool that he made use of my idea and played it for people. And people were saying, oh, wow, what's that? What's that? So that was the first inkling that I realized maybe somebody has an idea to use the wah-wah pedal usefully and creatively and get a sound with it. The other problem was, you know, and on the record dates that we had for Phil Spector, we used like three guitar players. We all sounded the same, and I wanted to sound different. So Jimi Hendrix made himself sound different, and I think that was the very, very beginning. The thing that really surprised me was Isaac Hayes, and this is the one sound that I never expected was when he did. I said, oh my God, I never dreamed of that greeting with the hi-hat of the drums. So Skippy Pitts and Isaac Hayes came up with that sound, and that was around early 70s. So really, by the early 70s, you know what, I was doing the New Zoo Review, coming right at you, Three Little Animals, and all. I was doing children's programs and saying, you know, wow, a pedal's history. I got it on the shelf, but these guys have at it. And I didn't see much future for the wah-wah pedal in my life. But so I kind of like put it on the shelf and said, do I really want to talk about the wah-wah pedal? No, I don't think so. I mean, there were so many other things I was thinking about. And I had the NBC News theme. However, I had the NBC News theme that went... sort of make it sound like overseas shortwave radio, and nobody could figure out. And I use a fuzz tone with it, fuzz tone and the wah pedal, and people say, wow, how's he getting that sound? What is that sound? Nobody knew what I was doing. So, and that theme song played on NBC for 18 years because nobody could figure out the sound. So,
do you remember which fuzz tone you used? Which specific one?
Yes, I was using the Vox.
The Vox fuzz tone, their little
box, yeah,
yeah.
Little box fuzz tone. I forget they had a name for it, but that's what I used for it, and it really gave me a really good fuzz sound.
Yeah, that was a popular one. It's interesting listening to you play and talking about Hendrix. A lot of the guys would do like White Room, where it was just a wah 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 type of thing, or a rhythmical thing. You and Hendrix, it seems that he used it like to change the tone subtly while he was playing. So while he was phrasing, he would open or close the wah. You seem to do that a lot too, where you use it more as a variable tone as opposed to a hard opening and closing of the filter. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. In fact, I think that that's why my pedal doesn't sound the same as the commercial pedals, because
yeah, could you use it like almost like a subtlety of the voice? Like later on, some of the musicians used the squawk box, which they tried to do the same thing. They would put that little tube in their mouth that, you know, the speaker, the driver was going through next to a microphone, and they would do the wah sound out with their voice. But you both of you seemed to phrase like that. That's what I'm picking up. That you would. I know Hendrix was trying to make it into a voice, and a couple of times he would like sing against his guitar.
That's what I really felt that the wah was all about. It was really coming as close to the human voice as possible. In fact, I talk to my guitar, you know, and I say, Wow, why are you crying? Wow, wow. What do you want? Water? You sound like a baby crying. Oh, leave me alone.
Yeah.
You'd like a bottle of beer? And so, anyway, Vox came out with the Vox Chrome pedal with the 846 and the Clive McCoy. And then they came up with the cheap version, which was called, let's give it a name. Call it the Crybaby. And there it is. Oh, there's...
I have my original Vox here.
Original Vox,
it's
yeah.
from Italy, Thomas Organ.
That's right. And all of the pedals were being made in Italy. My pedal was made right here in Sepulveda, where I wired it myself.
This is truly American made.
With the guys at Thomas Organ. And so, yes. So Vox was trying to market it, the expensive pedal that you have with the chrome, as a real expensive pedal, and they're going to have the cheap one. They're going to sell for real cheap. And what do we call it? Well, we can't call it the Vox Wah pedal. Let's call it Cry Baby. And the only thing that came out of the Vox history is the fact that my good friend Jim Dunlap had so much foresight. He said, "Would you like to sell the name Cry Baby to my company? Because I sell guitar." He was selling guitar straps and picks and all that. Oh, yeah, sure, fine, take it, we'll sell it to you. So he bought the name Crybaby. And now the word Crybaby is really far more famous than anything else.
But let me ask you, though, because the guts of those, of both of the wahs, the Crybaby always sounded different to me than the Vox wah. There was a definite difference in the sound. Do you know what they changed?
Yes. The thing was that when they actually copied the circuit from Dick Denny, they were looking at... See, the guitar has a lot of upper harmonics, and it was... They were really pushing the upper end as much as they could, like Dick Denny wanted to make it real loud. Well, when you push the pedal down, the fillings in your teeth almost rattle. So the thing was that... The Crybaby was, I think, an improvement, where they said, we don't want to have it that harsh. So they mellowed it down. Now, my pedal is more mellowed down than all of them, but... So the thing is, I wanted it to be as musical sounding as possible, and I didn't want it to be loud and harsh. Now, unfortunately, the pedal became a gimmick for players where they could go like, and you talk to any jazz musicians, they say, "Oh God, give me a break! Take that wah-wah pedal out of my life," because it, or turn the damn thing down, because it was too bright and brittle. Well, it wasn't loud. It was just that it was too harsh for the hearing. And so the wah-wah pedal developed kind of like a rock and roll great name for itself. But in other areas of music, it was just a little too hard for some musicians to accept. And they said, oh, you're the... They look at me and they say, so we can blame you for screwing up music, right? So I get these dirty looks sometimes.
So I just want to bring up real quick, for those of you listening, if you want to call in and ask a question to Dell, the phone number is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. We'll be taking callers very soon.
And we also have a live chat room over at www.flowguitarenthusiast.com. Just click on the chat and come on in and join us.
So while we're waiting, before we take our first caller, so one of the guitars you brought with you is a 63 Fender Strat?
It was a 62, I think, because I know I lived on Willoughby, right near Taddeo. I had bought our first house there at that time. And Leo had, quote-unquote, loaned me. He knew I was playing Gibson guitars. So he said, I've got a Jazzmaster guitar. And so I played the Jazz Master, and I called him up one day and I said, Leo, can I come down? I'd like to get another guitar here. I'd like to get a Strat. So he said, well, we got a Strat here, and he pulls out a Strat with a rosewood neck, and I said, gee, you know, I want a maple neck. He said, well, we don't make them that way. We don't have that. And I said, nah, then I don't think I want this. Here he's offering it to me, and I'm saying, I don't think I want it. And so he said, and I said, well, is there any way that I can get a maple neck? And he said, hold on a second, let me go to my office. He comes back with a neck in his hand, and he says, how does this neck feel? There's no guitar to it, just a neck. And I said, wow, this neck feels great. Well, it was a maple cap neck. He said, how about if I put, you know, this is going to be the future, what we're going to do, so we'll put this on your guitar. So the guitar is out of one vintage, and the neck is out of Leo's office. And so it didn't end there. I mean, Leo and I became very good friends, and I kept telling, talking to Leo, and I'd go down to see him. And the reason we got along so well is because I didn't know, because I was playing on Gene Autry's Melody Ranch, and Gene Autry was his idol. So anything that anybody worked with Gene Autry, hey, you're right in. And so I said to Leo, you know, the front pickup on that Strat just isn't quite bright enough. Can't we make it brighter? He says, yes, I'll just rewind it for you. He took the pickguard off, rewound it, put it on the winder himself. I wish I had a picture. I would give anything if I'd had that picture of me sitting there watching him wind my coil. So he says, how does that sound? He said, not bad. Can you make it a little brighter? He says, okay, here, I'll take it off again. And he rewound it about twice. And then the last thing was, I said, you know, the one thing that I really need on a Strat, and that is when you play the guitar, this is the front pickup, and then this is the middle pickup, and this is the backup pickup. But it didn't have one thing that I wanted, and that was both pickups, the front and the back, which would be. So the two pickups to me, that's the front pickup and the back pickup. But you take the two with this little toggle switch that Leo put in here.
That's sweet. Get that Tele sound.
Exactly. That's exactly what I wanted, was the Tele sound. So I have this little pickup that is in this pickguard, and people are saying, well, that really messed up the guitar a lot, because who knows who put that switch in there? I said, well, a guy named Leo Fender did. So, you know, I said, what can you say? I mean, all I can say is that this guitar is so special because it's a maple cap neck, and on the heel of the neck, when you take the neck off, you can see the Fordel from Leo. The neck is written on there with a pencil. And also he put in the switch here. So this guitar is a real gem of a player.
Is that an older body?
This is an older body. Yes, this body here is cream colored, and the serial number on it is L19134. For all you people who want to find out what year that was, you know, I didn't care in those days what year it was. I just wanted to make sure it played well.
Yeah, I got to take a look at it. The neck on that is amazing. That is an amazing neck.
Leo took it. He gave it to me. This was his prototype neck that he was going to. And then the following year, they started doing maple cap necks.
So for all of you, we will post pictures of Del's guitar, the Echophonic, and the Wah-Wah pedal up on our site, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com.
And also, too, I want to mention that if you want to listen to this show again, because there's a lot of information being put out here right now. Tomorrow, it should be posted on the latalkradio.com site. and probably a day later it will be on iTunes. You can get it on iTunes. You can also stream that show on Stitcher, and you can also stream it live on the LA Talk Radio site. So you got a couple of ways to get it, and it's free.
So we have a question from our live chat room from Squeetones, and he's wondering if there's what he or she is wondering what pedal companies that you are particularly excited about that are around now.
There's a lot of wonderful companies. I have a great relationship with Dunlop, only because the fact is that Jim Dunlop has really taken good care of all of his clients. They make a very reliable product, and I would say that there are so many of new pedals coming out, and they're with the technology today, they're all great, and it depends on what one's taste is. And I don't I'm not judgmental about, oh well, this is the right sound and that's the wrong sound. I just use the sound for what I think the particular music is to be applied for. So there's a lot of modeling type pedals out there. I don't really prefer modeling pedals as much as I do the real deal. I like the pedal either it works and it sounds good, and when you stomp on it, it plays, or it doesn't. But I don't. When you start getting into fine tuning and all that type of thing, I don't like to hear so much electronic as I'd like to hear the organic sound of the pedal. And I think Dunlap has done a good job on that. However, you know, there's many companies out there that I don't even maybe know about.
There are quite a few companies out there. So new one every day, it seems like.
Yeah, you have to check out Scott Sill's YouTube page, because he tests a bunch of them. He's done some various demos of several different pedals, including some of mine that I dug out and dusted out from the vault.
Could I just mention that if anybody out there is listening that would like to model or make a pedal just like my prototype, I'm available. So give me a call. I'd love to have you make the original prototype pedal.
Quick question, speaking about your prototype, what value pot is in that? Because there's a lot of debate on the different values.
Okay, let's go back to 1967, okay? We didn't even get to the moon by that time. And we were talking about digital what? And so the thing was, when we got values, it was like 20 plus minus 20%. So if you look at a capacitor, and if it's a 0.05, it might be 20.045 or 0.07 or whatever. It was so far away. But we just did. So I really have to say that the values I have in my pedal here were only measured by my hearing, only by my hearing of what it is, and we'd have to measure them all out to tell you exactly what the value
is. So you just basically tried different ones until you got what you like.
I drove the Thomas people crazy, and Stan Cutler said, "That's all right. Dell wants what he wants, so let him have it, and guys, go ahead and keep on soldering." And we soldered all day long trying different components, you know, different values. No matter what it said, I said, try another one. So it sounded good.
So one of the things I don't know, hopefully we'll have enough time, we're coming cut to the end of the show here, I wanted to know about is, well, the Wall of Sound. What did you do in participating with the Wall of Sound? How did you create that, and what was your part with Phil Spector's Wall of Sound?
Well, the part that I had to do with Phil Spector's Wall of Sound, mm-hmm, was the phone call. I got the phone call saying, "Hey, do you want to play a Phil Spector date? It pays scale and it might go overtime." And I said, "Hey, I'm part of the Wall of Sound." And of course, Hal Blaine was on it, and Ray Pullman was on it, and Carol Kay was on it, and Bill Pittman was on it. And so the Wall of Sound was really kind of created by the fact that we had like four guitar players. Well, we had about maybe 28 musicians in a small room over at Gold Star, and which would only accommodate like about 12 musicians. So some were out in the hall, and some were, the guitars were always in one corner near the drums and the bass. And so in order to make it sound nice and rich and full, and everything bled into everybody's microphone like crazy, Phil said, "Just turn up the echo." And that's the Wall of Sound.
What did you use when you were playing on those sessions? Do you remember the guitars?
Well, I remember exactly the guitar I was playing. You always brought three guitars, because you never know on a session. But I brought my Strat, and I brought a Gibson L5, and I brought a nylon string guitar, which is absolutely insane on a Phil Spector tape, but you never know. So I'm tuning up my L5 guitar, and Phil Spector came on out, and he says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just tuning up my guitar. You know, I'm just doing..." He said, "I don't want that guitar." I said, "Okay." He said, "I want the Strat. I want the Fender guitar." And he made it very clear that don't argue with him. So yeah. I said, "You know what? No problem, Phil." I put the L5 down and grabbed the Strat. And I said, "Okay, here we go."
Did you ever use the classical with him?
No.
No.
No, because everything was... It was like... Hi, baby. And there was another guy, that was a pretty darn good guitar player, but he made me really jealous, because every in between breaks, he starts singing these great voice he had. And I said, "Glenn, you know, I'm so jealous of you because I can't sing like you." His name is Glenn Campbell.
That's right. He started out as a session player.
Great session player.
Were you all using Fender guitars?
Glenn never did. He used a Japanese guitar.
Oh, wow.
Of all things. And Glenn could have gotten any guitar he wanted, but he loved the sound that he got on a Japanese guitar. And I did use a Japanese pickup on my L4 guitar because it has a certain sound.
That's an interest. And what amp did you use? I forgot to ask you.
Always
that.
I used either the Fender Deluxe or I used the Super Reverb. And that was the guitar of choice. And, you know, they always place the amplifier in front of you and it faced you. It never faced outward. It mm-hmm. faced towards mm-hmm. you so you could hear exactly what you were playing. And the Gold Star was the place where Phil made all of his hits.
Yeah, Gold Star, just ladies and gentlemen, just so you know, too, that was one of the important rock groups. The Buffalo Springfield used to record there, and Brian Wilson. And it was one of the first independent recording studios. You have to remember, back in those days, all the record companies had their recording studios, and you had to record at their place. That was pretty mandatory. And I think it was the Beach Boys that broke that. They were big enough where they can say, "We want to record where we want to."
And Sonny and Cher the same way.
Yeah.
They said, "We're bad." And the thing was, at Gold Star, you know, Stan Ross and Dave Gold were wonderful people. So they were great to work with.
Do we want to get, let's get all his info.
Yes, do you want to share your web pages and how people can contact you and see more about Del Casher?
Well, I'll tell you what. If you can go to, my name is Del, spelt with one L, not like Dell Computers, it's D-E-L. Just go to www.del, D-E-L, and Casher, spelt C-A-S-H-E-R.com. So just delcasher.com, or you can Google me and you'll find all kinds of propaganda about me and doing all kinds of different things, and Lawrence Welk and... Whatever.
You'll love, just, I was going through the pictures yesterday on his site, and the guitars are amazing, all these different guitars that he had.
Well, we had to carry a lot of guitars around, and of course we love guitars, and guitars are like our family. You
know? Yes, yes, no, I totally agree.
I never saw trombone players have 20 trombones.
Okay.
So I just wanted to bring up our guest next week. We will have Andy Brower, who is I would describe him as a guitar tech of the stars. He's done modifications for everybody from Slash to John Fogerty. He'll be our guest next week.
And he worked on one of my guitars, which I'll bring down.
He worked on mine also.
And he's a great guy, and he has a wonderful company that rented a lot of great stuff to people.
Absolutely. It's pretty amazing, the stuff that he has. So we'll be talking to him next week. Make sure to check www.flowguitarenthusiast.com to listen to Del's demo. And you can also listen to the show, download it on iTunes, and future shows. Thanks for listening.
Good night, everybody. See you next week.
Good night, folks.